Hello, and welcome to another episode of my podcast, The Global Agora. My name is Andrej Matyshak, and I work as the Deputy Head of Foreign Desk in Slovak Daily Pravda, which, by the way, means truth, and it's not Russian Pravda. Russia was attacked by Islamic State, but Moscow is trying to shift the blame and is spreading conspiracy theories about Ukraine's involvement. The Kremlin is lying despite the severity of the threat, as on March 22nd, extremists killed 143 people in the Krokus City Hall in Krasnogorsk in the Moscow Oblast. So is counterterrorism cooperation with Russia possible, taking into account also the brutal war Moscow is waging against Ukraine? And why was Russia attacked by ISIS? I talked to Lukas Weber, a co-founder and editor of Militant Wire. It's the media company that provides analysis of militant activity and armed conflict around the world. Listen to our conversation. If you enjoy what I do, please support me on Ko-fi. For the link, see also a description of this episode. And now, up to the new debate. I know we are discussing a pretty grim matter, but let me start with the question that may sound a bit less serious. Do you think that the Islamic State might be a bit frustrated when they hear that Russian President Vladimir Putin says that radical Islamists did it, but he's also still suggesting that Ukraine or the West is somehow involved in the attack in Moscow? Do extremists care about attribution?
I believe given the massive success in terms of lethality and casualty toll, the fact that they were able to hit such a large-scale target in Russia's capital city region and kind of the mass media attention this has garnered, most people around the world know that this was the Islamic State. They've been very aggressive in claiming the attack in their media output. And the attack itself fits the MO of the Islamic State in terms of just the brutality of it, the indiscriminate nature in terms of targeting everyone in the crowd. And the Russian rhetoric, of course, Moscow is embarrassed by the attack. They were issued a warning from the U.S. government, a tip-off, as well as a public alert notification to its citizens to avoid large crowds in the Moscow area. The timeline was a bit off. It said 48 hours, but the details of the warning now seem very prescient. The target ended up being exactly in line with the details provided. It was a large crowd in the Moscow area. So I think despite Russia's the heated rhetoric from Russian officials blaming Ukraine, blaming the US and the UK, most people, most policymakers around the world, the media, are fully aware that it was the Islamic State. And I think the organization is very patient and its messaging. Of course, the terror attacks are purposed to pursue a political end, some kind of coercion. So I think the Islamic State is very patient and they understand the geopolitical tensions and the current media and political environment in the West and around the world. So they likely expected this, but they have been working hard to make it clear it was them and to claim credit for the attack.
Can we sum it up, Lukas? What do we know about the attack? We are talking about ISIS, but was the attack organized by the Islamic State Khorasan province? And do they have means and the people to prepare it?
We know it was carried out by the Islamic State organization, its global and regional networks of branches, essentially operational hubs, operational nodes. So it was the Islamic State. And if we don't know exactly, we don't have enough information yet to link it to the Afghanistan-Pakistan branch. However, this does fit in line with trends that were already developing. So there were four ISKP-linked plots foiled in Europe since 2020, three of these coming much more recently, one just a couple weeks ago in Germany that was targeting Swedish government targets, perhaps inside Sweden. And even before this attack in the Moscow region, a plot was foiled, which was assigned to ISKP by the Russians, that an ISKP cell was plotting an attack against a synagogue in the Moscow area. And
when think of the Central Asian contingent that seems to be involved in this. For instance, two Kazakh nationals were killed in that raid, as reported by The Diplomat. And Central Asian fighters have been tapped heavily. And ISKP, the Afghanistan-centric branch, has been making intense media outreach, recruitment, fundraising, and incitement efforts targeting Central Asia. They've even rolled out Tajik, Uzbek, and Russian media wings. They've customized their messaging to criticize various policies of each of these associated governments. And so given this activity, the influx of media targeting and narrative targeting of the Central Asian states of Russia, these threats, the calls for supporters inside Russia to conduct attacks against Russian security and civilian and government targets. The intent, the activity, this all, the plot that was foiled just prior to this in Russia, U.S. government officials, intelligence officials telling the media that they believe this is ISKP, and they did have good intelligence prior to the Iran attack in early January that ISKP was also linked to that. Seems ISKP was linked to a recent church shooting in Istanbul, Turkey. So all of these signs really line up with this, though we should be skeptical of Russian government claims at this point in this kind of emotionally charged environment in terms of filtering what information is credible or not. And I think we should clarify as well that the Islamic State's central media apparatus claimed credit for this, but ISKP's Afghan branch wasn't credited. But then again, in the case of the Kerman-Iran double suicide bombing and the Turkey attack and so on, often, even though ISKP is tapped to participate, support, and perhaps even directly launch these attacks, IS's central leadership and propaganda hierarchy gets the final say in who is credited for the attack.
You mentioned Iran. There was an attack by ISKP. And also there was a warning, again, from the U.S., even if we know what kind of relations countries like Russia and Iran have with the West, with the U.S. It seems in both cases, Tehran and Moscow, of course, we don't know the details, but it seems to me, at least it seems to me, and of course, I'm just a layman, but it seems to me that they were not paying maybe sufficient attention to those warnings. Would you agree, or do you see this differently?
It's hard to say, for instance, and to separate the public rhetoric from what the intelligence and security apparatus has been doing. What is clear is that the response to the attack was very clumsy, was insufficient, and the efforts to disrupt this operation also were not up to the task, essentially. And I think that the Russians did take the threat seriously, the warnings seriously, as they did raid an ISKP cell in the capital at a recent clash in the Caucasus within what they said was an IS group. So there has been some movement to tackle these networks. But one problem, for instance, is that in the case of the raid against the cell targeting apparently a synagogue in the Moscow region, is it seems that all of the militants were killed. So there was no one to question afterwards. And perhaps if they were linked to this network, perhaps they were slated to participate or launch simultaneous or attack prior or afterwards. There was no one to question and really get information from. So there's a lot of moving parts here. It's hard to say what went on inside the Russian government and how internally they processed the United States warnings. And there is back channels for communication sharing and tip-offs. For instance, the U.S. even tipped off Iran, despite the tensions between the two governments. So it is hard to know what's going on behind the scenes, given the kind of heated rhetoric we've been seeing and the finger-pointing at various parties.
As brutal and even crazy such acts as we saw in Krakow City Hall are, you said the terrorists have their aims, including political coercion, and so on. So what was the main aim of the attack in Russia?
Yes, the Islamic State identified Russia as a very top enemy of the organization in the global movement back in 2014, and they listed Russia on a level similar to the United States. And Russia has been described by the Islamic State as what it calls the leader of the Crusader East. So even though its coalition differs from and is in some cases fighting against U.S.-led Western-backed forces in the Middle East and elsewhere, it still sees Russia as a priority enemy despite this, even though its enemies are in competition. what happened is that Russia's status as a priority enemy, a chief enemy of the Islamic State, was again heightened with the military intervention in Syria in 2015, and subsequently with its PMC and military activities against various Islamist groups, including the Islamic State in East Africa and the Sahel and elsewhere on the African continent. And more recently, a criticism of the Islamic State towards Russia has been its strengthened relations, its increased, its closening relationship with the Taliban in Afghanistan, which ISKP, its Afghanistan branch, is directly fighting. It's a primary enemy of the Islamic State in that conflict theater. So these kind of, this growing list of grievances, these rising hostilities towards Russia, have been coupled with a sense of opportunism. So the Islamic State has written, for instance, and celebrated the Russian invasion of Ukraine and the kind of damage this is causing to Russia's economy, its political standing worldwide, the death toll and casualty count amongst its military forces. It's also very hostile to Ukraine. It sees Ukraine as a proxy of the West, and it celebrates the rising risk of direct conflict between these two priority enemies as they perceive it. So in addition to this, as they've been watching the Ukraine invasion, and they've written about Russia's interventions in Africa, its war in Syria, its support of the Assad government and military, it saw that there were gaps in security coverage as Russia's intelligence and security apparatus has been stretched or put under pressure and spread thin. It coupled this increased grievance list, this rising hostility towards Russia, with this view of opportunity to exploit. And I think that's what's happening here.
It's interesting what you just mentioned, because you are reading my mind a bit, as I wanted to ask about what do we know about how ISIS perceives the Russian war against Ukraine, and if the extremists are discussing this. And clearly, from your answer, it seems that they care about it.
Yes, even if you look at, for instance, my organization and my colleagues, we monitor various ISKP channels, Islamic State channels, and particularly the Central Asian contingent, the Tajik networks in particular. They actually share news regularly throughout the day, video and footage, news articles about the Russian invasion and occupation and war in Ukraine. So they are watching this very closely. And even in their official propaganda, as I mentioned, they celebrate these wars. They also celebrate rising tensions between the United States and China over Taiwan and other locations and other issues. So they really invite this, as they say, you know, U.S., Iran, Russia, China as priority enemies. And if they're going to fight each other in whatever capacity, proxy wars or direct conflict, they invite this and they celebrate the chaos it causes, the resource intensive nature of it. And they look to exploit this as well, in addition to celebrating and threatening these countries.
Russia was able to arrest the perpetrators of the attack. But should we be surprised that the terrorists didn't act also like suicide bombers?
No, because it's not in every instance that the attackers are looking to perish during the act. Because if we look at, for instance, the Istanbul shooting, those attackers got away. The Kabul hotel raid that ISKP launched, at least one of those attackers got away. So there is a history of this. And one thing that may be possible is that they plan to launch a subsequent attack. And also, if we look, for instance, after the attack, shortly after, the Islamic State central media outlets released video, first-person footage video recorded by the attackers during the attack. So this may have been so that if it was not live-streamed or whatever the circumstances is, perhaps they wanted to get away to maximize the media attention, the propaganda value of this, relay the video to IS's central media operatives, its propagandists, its lead propagandists, to edit, remaster, and release this footage. And of course, there's a possibility of they were planning a subsequent attack. So it's not surprising. There is a history of it and a precedent for it.
Russia was attacked by terrorists, but Russia is also lying about it. Not to mention the Kremlin is waging a brutal war against Ukraine. Do you see any space for counterterrorism or cooperation of the West with Russia beyond sharing info about possible threats?
It's hard to know what kind of coordinated action they'll take, but I think in the information space, there will continue to be information sharing and back channels to communicate and warn about threats. The United States, for instance, even warned Iran prior to the Kerman attack, and it seemingly warned Russia in this instance. President Macron, he recently said that ISKP tried to attack his country multiple times, which is not surprising given the amount of plots and activity in Europe. But Macron also said, and this important to note, that in this context, France and Macron himself are discussing sending more troops, getting more deeply involved in the war in Ukraine to support Kyiv. So it's not surprising at all. And I think that this kind of information sharing will continue despite whatever condition the geopolitical tensions will be in the future.
I know my next question would probably require a long separate discussion, but if you look at the current global state of ISIS in terms of how the group is organized and regarding the severity of threats it represents, what do we see? Where is ISIS really active and maybe even able to conduct large-scale operations?
It has branches in Africa which are very strong, and they control territory. They have very deep manpower rosters in terms of numbers. They're well-resourced. So if we look at the Lake Chad region, for instance, the Sahel, where IS has a strong presence and reach and capabilities and recruitment networks, these groups, though they are regionally focused now in terms of where they prioritize their resources, they, of course, do embrace the continued global vision of the Islamic State organization, leadership, and movement. However, they can be tapped at any time to support, lend a hand in, or carry out international terrorist attacks if called upon by leadership. Perhaps if their local leadership, their local regional leadership decides that this is what they'd like to do. But these groups are very strong in the insurgency sense when we look at their offensive capabilities. The Islamic State in Afghanistan, though its activities inside its theater of insurgency, its official territory of operations in Afghanistan and Pakistan, though it's been degraded by the Taliban's increased pressure, for instance, it has really risen as a propaganda force, a media force, as well as a group that targets international interests domestically. It conducted a suicide bombing against American forces during the withdrawal from Afghanistan in 2021. It's attacked the Pakistani and Russian embassies. It's fired rockets into Tajikistan and Uzbekistan. It launched a raid against the Kabul Hotel with the express purpose of killing Chinese nationals. It targeted a Chinese delegation at the Taliban's foreign ministry building, and so on. And this kind of regionalization and internationalization has been its external operations ambitions and capabilities, in addition to these two other aspects of this trend and this vision for itself. And we've seen these plots fold in Europe, a real upswing in activity in Europe, the plot fold in Moscow before the attack, and this attack, which seems to be linked in some capacity to ISKP branch in its Central Asian apparatus. So in terms of insurgent force, the branches in Africa are very strong. We have to keep an eye on its group and network in Syria. They still show signs that they have capabilities to inflict real damage. And its South and Central Asian networks, they've been an increasing global force in its messaging, its propaganda and media, as well as domestic targeting of foreign interests and nationals and its external operations and transnational terrorist threats. So these are some things to look out for.
I think many people, if they listen to our interview, we were quite surprised, because I think ordinary people think, okay, ISIS was more or less defeated in Iraq and in Syria a few years ago, and suddenly you are describing the organization that is still relatively functioning. So do we pay enough attention to threats like ISIS or other threats, like there is still Al-Qaeda out there?
I think there's some fatigue in the West, in the United States, with the prolonged global war on terror. For instance, public opinion of this really dropped, and it's become a kind of toxic issue for politicians becoming mentioned less and less in presidential campaigns, for instance, and also the rise of China, the reassertion of Russia, the kind of end of unipolarity back into a landscape, global political landscape of multipolarity, of great power competition. These emerging issues, which are quite rapid and do deserve great attention, increased attention, and some of the Western countries, the United States, are scrambling to keep up after kind of an era of engagement mindset. So I think that the shift away from the global war on terror, and this is not to justify it or promote it, but this fatigue combined with the quick reemergence of great power competition and prioritization of this has kind of taken attention away, the Russian invasion of Ukraine, the conflict outbreak between Israel and Hamas, and various other issues. These are drawing a lot of attention, and rightly so, but it's important to remember that just because we want to move on from the threat of terrorism and leave it behind us in history, it's not going away. And in fact, we're seeing a resurgence of IS activity in the West. And if we look at the Afghanistan branch, for instance, it seems that they have a Canadian propagandist and an Italian propagandist. So it's very transnational, and it still impacts the West. And this Moscow attack may be a sign of things to come in the near and midterm, and reminds us that this organization is very capable. It still has many supporters around the world with global reach, and they can inflict real damage if we take our eye off the ball.
Lucas, so one last thing to wrap it up. Of course, I don't expect that you are following Slovakia, but this is a country in Central Europe, in NATO and the EU, and my government just decided to strengthen the security measures during the Easter holiday. It seems more like a political message, as they want to look tough because we are going to have a presidential elections. But on the other hand, how high on the list of ISIS a country like Slovakia might be?
Well, I think even in your country, it is justified to some extent. I don't know if the government is taking the right steps, but it is justified to increase vigilance due to the fact that the kind of logistical routes of movement throughout Europe to launch attacks, for instance, could run through your country. Even if they're not targeting your specific population, they could be targeting American interests, diplomatic targets within your country, Russian ones, Chinese, and so on. So there's always a risk of this kind of spillover capitalization on international targets within your country. There is a threat of your country being attacked directly. And when we look at, for instance, France and Germany, there's been a very high level of activity in these countries with ISKP in Germany in particular. So there is a threat to Europe and North America, and U.S. officials have been warning about the ISKP threat, and that in a few months they may have the capabilities and they do have the intent to strike within the North American continent. So there is reason to increase your security measures and awareness and really keep an eye on this threat, as it is very real and very serious.
This was another episode of my podcast, The Global Agora. Subscribe, listen on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and on the other platforms. If you enjoy what I do, please support me on Ko-fi. For the link, see also the description of this episode. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned.